This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Oh! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
What's going on, everybody, guys and girls? Welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I am one of the hosts of this show, Michael Ritter. You can find me on X at Michael5Ritter, on Instagram at MichaelRitter5, and also one of the hosts of the Football Function Podcast, available on all of your podcasting platforms, including on Patreon, if you prefer an ad-free listening experience. We are officially into the new season, if you will, of WWE. As soon as WrestleMania is over, you guys already know how it works. There is no off-season. The very next night, Raw after Mania, is typically a pretty good episode of WWE television for the most part every single year. Usually you get a couple call-ups, maybe a return, something they save just so they didn't empty their entire basket at WrestleMania, something to kind of get the crowd excited that following night. You usually see something in that regard. I thought this episode of Monday Night Raw was pretty good. The opening segment with Cody Rhodes and The Rock obviously was pretty long, took up a pretty good chunk of the show. So I feel like, you know, this episode of SmackDown was really that SmackDown after Mania feeling, you know, like compared to Monday Night Raw. I think that Friday Night SmackDown, just whenever you think about obviously a new person showing up, we can talk about that here in a little bit. And then, you know, next week on Monday Night Raw, they're getting Sheamus from what I've seen. We'll see if, you know, they end up staying on those respective brands, given that the WWE draft is just a couple of weeks away. And that's another reason to get excited, just in of itself. I mean, the WWE draft usually shakes things up. Now, back in the day, back in the Ruthless Aggression era, kind of going into the PG era, just whenever the brand split was still a thing, the WWE draft meant a lot more because, you know, those draft picks felt more like, holy crap, like when John Cena was drafted from SmackDown over to Monday Night Raw. That was absolutely insane. Whenever Randy Orton went over to SmackDown, you know, like there's been times whenever these draft picks and, you know, people switch shows where it does kind of floor you. I feel like, you know, we've kind of lost that. And that's something that is underappreciated, really. Just wrestlers becoming synonymous with a specific brand. Seth Rollins, for example, he's probably one of the rare ones in today's WWE where it would feel weird if Seth Rollins came over to SmackDown, just because he's been on Monday Night Raw pretty much since the brand split's been back. I mean, we've seen him on SmackDown. I mean, he was at the SmackDown that I went to in Dallas, Texas back in March. So it's not like we never see him there, but him actually being a SmackDown superstar, I feel like would be, you know, pretty jaw-dropping. Other than that, you know, I mean, of course, Roman Reigns, he spent so much time on Monday Night Raw that if he were to show up, it wouldn't necessarily feel any different. But, you know, I mean, back in the Ruthless Aggression era, which is, you know, an era I like to reference a lot on this show, you had the wrestlers that really felt synonymous with their specific brand, specifically on SmackDown. I mean, they were the ones on Raw, too, you know, like the Dudley Boys. Whenever you think about the Dudley Boys, you don't really ever think about them being on SmackDown. Kind of the same thing with Stone Cold Steve Austin. You know, he was a Monday Night Raw superstar, Triple H. Although he, you know, had his run on SmackDown early before he had his huge World Heavyweight Championship run on Monday Night Raw with Evolution. But wrestlers like, you know, Kurt Angle, Undertaker, Eddie Guerrero, there's so many that just felt like they belonged on SmackDown. Even the Big Show, you know, like there was a pretty talented roster. Even the announce team with Michael Cole and Taz, the referees had their blue shirts, and obviously the ropes were blue, which is something that would be such an easy small addition that would make such a difference. And I'm not going to get any further into that, but anyways, WrestleMania has come and gone. WrestleMania 40, I feel like the card itself was relatively predictable. I will say I did not. The one thing that happened on WrestleMania weekend that I did not expect to happen, that kind of swerved me, was Austin Theory and Grayson Waller winning the tag team championship. So I kind of, you know, I fully expected that R-Truth and The Miz could do it. I thought that that was, you know, a fairly likely outcome. Now, with the other belts, I thought that, you know, New Catch Republic had an opportunity to do it. I thought maybe they would want the Judgment Day to, you know, keep a little bit of their gold. Not both sets of tag team championships, but maybe instead of just losing one, maybe just, or instead of losing both, losing one. I do like the decisions that they went with. We'll see what Grayson Waller and Austin Theory end up doing with these championships. All they got was a video package on SmackDown tonight. It's not like they got any type of TV time in front of the crowd. This was clearly like a pre-taped video package that they cut. And, you know, we saw Nick Aldis backstage with New Catch Republic and the Street Profits. And he said that, you know, he's going to do what he can to find challengers for those SmackDown Tag Team Championships, which does kind of make me wonder what they're going to do with the belts. Like, are they going to just continue this color theme? Like, are they going to just leave the belts blue, keep the belts red? That's pretty much the only type of connection to the last few years or whenever the belts were themed to their specific brand. You know, the Raw Women's Championship, the SmackDown Women's Championship, and, you know, the tag team belts as well, which always led to that confusion. You know, if a wrestler from a different show won that belt, it kind of made no sense for it to be named after a specific brand. So I feel like they should get away from those now that they have an opportunity to do that. They could just, I know they don't like bringing back old belts, but I mean, you could easily just bring back the World Tag Team Championships and the WWE Tag Team Championships. It's exactly what they just did with the women's titles, right? Like, now we have the Women's World Championship and the WWE Women's Championship. They're, you know, spitting images of the men's belts, just with white straps. So I feel like you could easily just bring back the belts that were in the Ruthless Aggression era, you know, like have the World Tag Team Championships, which were held by, like I mentioned, the Dudley Boys several times. I mean, the Hardy Boys got their hands on those championships. I remember whenever Kane and RVD had those belts, we saw them make their way to Evolution multiple times, Dave Bautista and Ric Flair. And then the WWE Tag Team Championships, obviously, you can think about the Guerreros having those. You can also think about the Basham Brothers. Those belts were also passed around on that brand. And, you know, I would be fond if they just made a little bit of a callback. You don't have to absolutely make them, you know, spitting images, obviously, because you have to put that new WWE logo on them. But I think there is a way where you can make it at least resemble it in a certain, you know, in a way. Kind of similar to the World Heavyweight Championship. It looks a lot like the old school World Heavyweight Championship, but just, you know, a little bit different. So I would be a fan if that happened. But as far as the rest of WrestleMania, I mean, you know, the second night was extremely predictable, I felt, which wasn't a bad thing, just as far as the winners and losers. Now, did I expect Damian Priest to go out there and cash in? Absolutely not. I did expect Drew McIntyre to win, which he did. You know, I'm glad he got his moment. We'll see how that plays out going forward. Obviously, with him and them going to Scotland soon, it just made sense for him to be the champion. Maybe they'll let him win it there. I've seen that speculated on the internet. So, you know, kind of just let that play out. But as far as him going out there, cashing in, CM Punk having a hand in it, it was beautiful. It was great storytelling. And I feel like everybody kind of, you know, they were able to satisfy multiple different fan bases throughout the entire WWE universe. Obviously, CM Punk being injured, he couldn't be involved in the match, so they wanted to see him get some type of involvement in this storyline. He did just that by pretty much costing Drew McIntyre's championship. Now, Drew McIntyre's to blame for the most part, but because CM Punk pretty much looked like he got the better of Drew and it cost Drew his championship, now whenever he's healthy, we're probably going to see a grudge match between them two. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this ended up running all the way down to SummerSlam with one of these guys end up taking the championship away from Damian Priest. But obviously, it's a long way to go. We'll see who ends up being the actual number one contender whenever that time comes, because I feel like, you know, they're going to give Damian Priest a little bit of a run with this belt here. It'll make Judgment Day feel a little bit more legit. Now they have both world championships, Rhea's WWE Women's World title, and now just the World Heavyweight Championship. So, yeah, I feel like that's a great start for this new era, this quote-unquote new era over there on Monday Night Raw, which, you know, we're hearing a lot about that, right? We're hearing a lot about the new era in WWE, the Paul Levesque era. And it does make sense. You know, he's doing a lot of great things with the company. They're breaking a lot of records, and I feel like that's only going to continue just because how great the roster is. And whenever you actually have somebody as capable as Triple H pulling the strings and kind of making it all happen, you know, he knows how to produce a good product. And I've already mentioned it several times. You guys already know the longtime listeners, which shout out to the new listeners who have come. I know that the WWE podcast has really shot up in the overall rankings. I think, you know, we cracked the top 10, I believe, you know, and that's, you know, obviously shout out to Matt and everything he's built here. But I know there's probably some new listeners, so shout out to you guys. But the longtime listeners, I'm sure you guys are well aware that the Ruthless Aggression era, in my opinion, is one of the best eras of all time. And because Triple H was so involved in that, you know, specifically on Monday Night Raw, and he was able to see how well WWE was ran with a structured format, I think this WWE draft could be a little bit more beneficial. And, you know, I think that it could be more set in stone once these wrestlers really get cemented into their new homes. Keep in mind, Nick Altus wasn't here the last time we did a WWE draft. You know, now it's him and Adam Pearce pretty much going head to head. They have their own little side rivalry going on. Man, I think something just tells me, you know, we're entering this new era. It seems like now's the time. Pull the trigger on it. The roster's never been deeper. All the championships have never meant more than they do right now with what Gunther's done. Logan Paul having the United States Championship. Now Cody Rhodes having the WWE Championship. Obviously, the World Heavyweight Championship is just, it's coveted now because what Triple H said, he put it on Seth Rollins. He made that championship mean so much. But now there's so much story tied into that. Like now Drew McIntyre wants to get his hands back on it. Seth Rollins, you know, he's going to have his rematch at some point. I know he's going to take some time off. That's pretty much well established at this point, at least 4 weeks. But even then, I think maybe, you know, he's probably going to take a little bit of a break from the championship picture. And maybe someone like CM Punk, who was just entrenched in that storyline, given that he's the one that cost Drew. So the World Heavyweight Championship is juicy, and it has its own interest for other reasons, whereas the WWE Championship, I mean, you don't even have to say anything. I mean, it was just taken off of Roman Reigns. This is the first time that I'm recording a podcast here on the WWE podcast that Roman Reigns isn't the champion. And I've been doing this since 2020. So, I mean, holy, you know what? Like, it is a new era. And there's reasons to be excited, you know, obviously. You know, we don't have to get too much further into the WrestleMania aspect of it, but, you know, this is the first time I've gotten a chance to hop on here and talk to you guys about what I think was one of the most entertaining WrestleManias of all time. But you guys are here to talk about SmackDown, specifically the SmackDown that aired on April 12th, 2024 from Detroit Rock City, Detroit, Michigan. Location breakdown brought to you obviously by none other than DJ Kuzmo, and this episode of SmackDown opened with Cody Rhodes, the new undisputed WWE champion. Now, hey, are they dropping the Universal tagline to this? I'm not 100% sure. I've just noticed Samantha Irvin has said it. We've seen, you know, the commentary team, whether it's Michael Cole, whether it's Corey Graves, I've heard it being called just strictly the WWE Championship, the undisputed WWE Championship, and sign me up. Like, if that's what they're going to do, if that's what they're going to call it, I think that would be awesome. Just, you know, it's a lot more simple. Paul Heyman likes to drag it out. A lot of people like to just make it such a long, the WWE Undisputed Universal Heavyweight Champion. Like, that's way too damn many. Let's be honest. Undisputed WWE Champion, right there. I think that's perfect. But Cody mentions being interrupted by The Rock on Monday Night Raw, and then does a little bit of a callback to his wife's quote-unquote open mic night quote from AEW, which was, you know, a nice little Brandy Rhodes cameo. If you haven't seen it, go look it up. Brandy Rhodes open mic. I'm sure if you just type it in on YouTube, you'll be able to find it. If you type it in on the X bar or Twitter bar, whatever you call it. It was just pretty entertaining from, you know, one superstar to another who all are pretty much in WWE. Now, I know Brandi Rhodes isn't officially in WWE, but her husband is the guy, you know? So that, I feel like, pretty much catapults her to well in the WWE circle now. He talks about The Rock giving him an item, or should I say returning an item that was actually gifted to him by Cody Rhodes. And then, of course, walking into the sunset. You know, if you didn't already see the Monday Night Raw that happened after Mania, definitely go watch this segment. Like I said, it opened the show. It was about 45 minutes. I'm sure Matt talked all about it on the Raw review, but that's pretty much what they were alluding to. But just like the rest of us, Cody doesn't anticipate that his run-ins with The Rock are over, but that's down the line. There are very important things to discuss happening right now, such as his next opponent for Backlash. And then he lists off the six men battling for that opportunity in two triple threat matches. The winners of those triple threat matches that are happening tonight face off next week, one-on-one, and the winner gets a trip to Backlash, France to be exact, and an opportunity to face Cody Rhodes for the WWE Championship. So, I mean, a lot's on the line here. This is very quickly as we get into this new season. Some of these superstars are getting a very good opportunity to really catapult themselves to the very top, you know, in the main event picture here on a pay-per-view that's going to be probably massive. If you just look at how the other overseas WWE pay-per-views have been, it's outstanding what they're able to do overseas. And that's a testament to the overseas fans having the passion. They don't get a chance to see it on a weekly basis like you know, like we do here in the States, whether it's live events, shows that are merely just a handful of hours away. You know, you look at people that are overseas that are diehard WWE fans just like us, they don't get the opportunities that we get. So, you know, you definitely, you always appreciate that WWE starting to give them a big stage. They're not just going there for a Monday Night Raw or a tour where they're doing several Monday Night Raws and some live events. They're going there for some of the biggest shows that are featuring some of their biggest stars. So you have to appreciate that. But Cody Rhodes does mention he has respect for some of these, you know, superstars that are in here, specifically Kevin Owens, Rey Mysterio, you know, probably a couple others. But he does say to all of them that if you're coming for the king, you best not miss. And we hit his music. And that kind of leads me right there. As soon as this scene happened or this segment happened in real life, I knew, I was kind of like, okay, who's the champion on SmackDown now? Like, is it Cody Rhodes? Did he come over from Raw? Does him winning this championship automatically mean that he's going to be a SmackDown superstar? The draft coming up is likely going to explain and answer all of those questions. So it's like whenever I'm watching a movie or specifically wrestling with my stepson, he has to, like, he's always asking me, what's this? What's that? Like, what's happening? What's going on? And I usually tell him, hey, like, if you just watch it, every question you have will probably be answered. And if it hasn't, then I'll explain it, you know, at the end. But that's kind of what I'm trying to tell myself here. Like, yes, there's questions that I have about where WWE is going to go moving forward, specifically with how they're going to handle this brand split. But I do think that because the people that are involved in making the decisions have a really good track record so far, I think that, you know, we should give them the benefit of the doubt at this point and just kind of assume that they're going to do what's best for the company. And, you know, I think that at the very least they've earned that given, you know, the success that they've had just in the last few months. But moving on here, the Bloodline are shown approaching the champion's locker room, but it no longer says the Bloodline. It says American Nightmare. And they look shocked. And Kevin Owens walks by, pretty much just approaches that same door, except he walks in, makes sure to tell them that they are not invited. And Solo says he'll take care of it. And at this point, that just makes me laugh out loud. I'll get to that here in just a little bit. But Heyman tells him, Solo that is, that he has to accept that it's the champ's locker room. And the best way to get it back is to get the championship back. And that's directly from the tribal chief. Now, moving on here, we get a triple threat match. One of the two triple threat matches that are going to determine the number one contender, or at least the wrestlers in the number one contenders match for Backlash, challenging Cody Rhodes. This one is between Santos Escobar, Bobby Lashley, and LA Knight. Before the match, they show a backstage interview where Santos makes it very clear that it was not Legado del Fantasma that attacked Dragon Lee. So I just wanted to kind of make that a very important point. Who knows if they're telling the truth or not? This is another thing that we kind of just have to let develop. If this was just a little bit of a heel move where they're trying to lie, obviously it was them, then, you know, that wouldn't shock me. But if there was somebody else involved and they're about to bring somebody else in, because like I said, it's that new season where call-ups happen, returns happen, new arrivals happen, You never know who's going to show up is pretty much what I'm trying to say. But as far as the actual match goes, LA Knight is in control whenever Angel and Humberto interfere. And then, obviously, out come the Street Profits because Humberto and Angel Garza start to go after Bobby Lashley. And then the Street Profits come out and take them out of the equation. And then, of course, Electra Lopez is taken out by B-Fab. Santos sends Bobby Lashley to the corner ring post. And then LA Knight hits Blunt Force Trauma to get the win and advance to the number one contenders match next week. I feel like that was the right winner. Pretty good booking. I mean, there was an obvious, clear distraction point in the match where the momentum shifted, and you still thought that maybe Santos was going to win, and luckily he did not. And, you know, LA Knight gets the most important win so far. Obviously, just beat AJ Styles, but, you know, going forward, this is going to get him closer. So it's one of the most important wins on his path to the Undisputed WWE Championship. So, up next, the Bloodline come out, and Paul Heyman addresses WrestleMania 40 and clarifies that the Bloodline have no excuses for what happened. They aren't blaming any of the people who came out. Not John Cena, not The Undertaker, not even main event Jey Uso. They're taking responsibility for Roman getting distracted by his lust for revenge on Seth Rollins. As Heyman is getting ready to talk about Roman rising from the ashes like a phoenix, Solo interrupts him, talking about how losing and winning quote-unquote matter, and that losing should have consequences. Now, before I go any further, what the hell, like, is Solo, oh man, like, I don't even know, like, kind of where to start on this. This is the same guy that's lost, like, 35 matches in a row, the same guy that cannot get a win, is not really taking serious whatsoever, but yet, he is getting upset, and winning and losing matters, and there should be consequences. Like, please tell me they're going to call back to this at some point, and someone is going to acknowledge that Solo is on a massive losing streak. That's kind of what I was talking about earlier, you know, whenever I said that, you know, whenever he said, I'll take care of this, whenever Kevin Owens walked in, where I almost laughed out loud. Like, I'm curious, like, who are they trying to fool at this point? Like, Solo, he can frown all he wants, he can kind of stand there, but all it really does is make him look like a jackass whenever he loses on a weekly basis. I don't know what it is about, like, it's not really a criticism of him. It's more so of the booking and the people making the decisions, because they're the ones that are, you know, booking him to lose these matches, but they're also trying to come out here and book him as this scary enforcer that we're supposed to all think is going to get a win, whenever in reality, this guy hasn't won a match since what, like September? I don't know when exactly the whole John Cena thing happened, but it's been such a long time that it's like, what are you going to take care of? Are you going to give Kevin Owens the momentum he needs to, you know, go dethrone Cody Rhodes? You say you're going to take care of this. The only thing you're going to do, like, anytime you touch another wrestler, they get a win. So it seems like you're probably the last person that needs to, quote unquote, take care of anything as far as the Bloodline goes, because maybe the Bloodline grew in numbers. Well, I don't know, maybe. They might have stayed the same, because if you count Jimmy Uso leaving, then, you know, who knows? Because continuing on here, after he says that there's consequences, he turns his attention to Jimmy Uso, gives him a hug, and says, I love you, before turning away and allowing Jimmy to be attacked from behind by none other than Tama Tonga. Now, I'm most familiar with this guy from his long-running feud on the internet with Enzo Amore. So this is someone that's, you know, been a professional wrestler for a very long time. The son of Haku, so he is a legitimate Bloodline member. But I will say, him and Jimmy Uso kind of feuding immediately out of the gate, that seems like a great move. Jimmy Uso definitely needs to get a better taste in everybody's mouth, because that match at WrestleMania with Jay was just absolutely pathetic, and people are just crapping all over it. A lot of people saw it coming, because Jimmy himself isn't a really good singles wrestler, and you knew that the chemistry just wasn't going to be there. It was just a super kick fest. And, you know, I really wasn't a fan of that. So we'll see if Tama Tonga can give a better performance with Jimmy, if that is the direction they decide to go. But Heyman clearly didn't want this to happen. He tries to call Roman Reigns, but Solo grabs his phone and stomps on it before Solo destroys Jimmy with a chair in the corner of the ring. And Heyman is shown saying that this is not what the tribal chief wants. Now, I will say, Solo grabbing the phone and stomping it did absolutely nothing. Like, I'm sure I wasn't the only person that said, I mean, come on, dude, like, that wouldn't do anything at all. If it were a flip phone and maybe you broke it like that, then yeah, cool, I could understand that. Or like a BlackBerry where you could absolutely, like, damage the keyboard or something. But the fact that it was like an iPhone and you stomped on it between the wrestling mat and your wrestling boot, it's like, come on, like, that didn't do anything. If you'd have thrown it towards the stage, which, smaller stage. Triple H commented that this is probably going to be something they do going forward just to allow more fans to be in there. I'm all for it. I've always said, I've been saying at least here lately, that I feel like they're overdoing it with the LED boards, like all the LED lights and all that stuff, the ring post, the barricade, the ramp, the stage, everything at this point can light up and do all types of different, you know, different pictures and graphics. Which is cool. It's nice to show off the new technology, but at the same time, it does somewhat take away from the beauty of just pro wrestling, you know? And I feel like they're trying to drift away from sports entertainment. I know that the LED lighting is pretty much nothing to do with sports entertainment, but I'm just saying, if they're trying to go back to a more pro wrestling world, then maybe just dial it back a little bit. You know, you can still do all your pyro and you can still have LED features. You know, I mean, I don't think they're going to change their ring posts and their barricade and things like that. But what they're doing with the stage, I feel like could possibly be enough. That's just kind of, you know, what I've gathered just from the few times I've seen the wrestlers come out. I think it adds a lot to it. It makes the wrestlers feel bigger than, you know, when they're coming out of a massive stage, they kind of look like normal people. But if they're walking out of this smaller entrance where it just makes them look a little bit bigger and the fans are right there next to them, it just seems like it's a win-win all around. So, you know, who knows how long they continue to do that. I do like specific stages, you know, like specifically Backlash. Like back in the day, Backlash used to have a very cool entrance theme. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. You're just going to have to go Google some of the Backlash stages over the years. And it always used to have a nice theme to it. It would be cool to see them bring that back or something in that nature. Just, you don't have to bring the pyro and the LED back, but you can bring just the specific themed stages. You know, No Mercy used to have a nice specific entrance. Same thing with like Armageddon and Judgment Day. So all the pay-per-views that they have gotten rid of, it's allowed them to just make all of their stages not have any type of theme that go with it. And if they were to just go back to that direction, like I said, Triple H is more than familiar with that era. So, you know, who knows what they can end up doing, but it would just be something that I would advocate for sure. But anyways, continuing on here, Bron Breakker versus Cameron Grimes, very decisive win for Bron Breakker. He has a new entrance theme. There really wasn't a whole lot more to take away from this other than I hope, you know, he's one of the guys that stays on SmackDown during this draft. He would definitely be towards the top of my list of, you know, the guys that I would love to keep on this brand. Up next, Bayley comes out to You Deserve It Chance, and she talks about how damn good it feels to be WWE Women's Champion again, and this title reign feels different. Of course, she credits the fans, but it really feels genuine, not just your typical babyface agenda where they want to please the crowd and say it's because of you guys. I feel like she does have a type of following and, you know, a massive fan base where that is genuine, and there's always been Bayley signs and people that want to see Bayley on top. And they feel like she has a lot of talent and, you know, she's not a spring chicken either. She's getting up there in terms of, you know, pro wrestling ages. She's been around for quite a while and she didn't get in this when she was like 22 years old, you know, so it's definitely been a long journey for Bayley, and she's had a hell of a career. And you look at some of the fans that she's had over the years, you know, especially in her Hugger era, which was, I don't even know how long ago, like 5 years ago that she's been that version of herself. And You know, those fans are damn near adults now, you know, and they have that connection with Bayley. So I think that she means it whenever she says that the fans are a big reason why she is where she is. But she says that she's excited to start off this era the right way by giving an opportunity. And as she's speaking, Tiffany Stratton interrupts her and assumes that the challenge was for her. But Bayley says that she had somebody else in mind, Naomi. Tiffany says that Naomi couldn't win a title if it glowed in the dark, and on cue, her music hits and Naomi comes out and tells Tiffany that she tried her on the wrong night. And before she could accept Bayley's challenge, she has to take care of Stratton. And I will say, this was nice that they actually kind of played into the fact that she's married to Jimmy Uso and he just got attacked by his brother and likely kicked out of the bloodline. And there was just, you know, a wild opening segment that sent him to the, you know, the doctor's room, the training room. So, you know, I like that they didn't just make it seem like she was all just, you know, typical Naomi out there just feeling the glow. Like, no, they made her allude to the fact that she's not having that great of a night. And she does, you know, kind of pay off what she says a little bit later. Before that, Kayla Braxton is shown backstage outside of the trainer's office waiting to get an update on Jimmy Uso. As Heyman comes out, Tama Tonga walks up and says, by orders of the tribal chief. And he like gets up in Heyman's face, and you know, Heyman obviously scared, confused, which raises the question, did Roman Reigns actually order that hit on Jimmy Uso earlier? Heyman said it's not what the tribal chief wants, but maybe the tribal chief is pushing out Heyman. I don't know. You know, this leads those questions. That's why I'm glad that they're not just leaving the bloodline out, saying, you know, we reached the mountaintop. You know, the story was finished. The streak is over. They're trying to give us a new version of the bloodline, it feels. And we'll see where it leads. But nonetheless, I'm glad that this is what they're doing. Up next, we do get that one-on-one match, Naomi versus Tiffany Stratton. Naomi wins. Not necessarily sure I agree with the, you know, the win-loss decision. I do like Naomi. I feel like she obviously is an asset to the company, and she's been a former women's champion in her own right. But I just feel like if, you know, we're in this new era and this is the beginning of the year here where you likely like to test out new stars, why not push Tiffany Stratton to the moon? I feel like she has a decent following behind her. She's good enough in the ring. She's got the character. I doubt they're going to rush it with her, but I was a little bit caught off guard that she didn't get the win here. But if we do get Naomi versus Bayley, I'm all here for it. You know, it's a babyface versus babyface, so that's a little bit strange. But who knows what actually does, you know, come out of this thing. But, you know, I was just a little bit surprised with Naomi getting the win here. Up next, we get Chelsea and Piper versus Jade and Bianca. Chelsea goes up to Nick Aldis before this match happens, kind of says that she hopes to be drafted to SmackDown because she just likes Nick a little bit more. Adam Pearce, you know, she's not really a fan of him. They set her up with that one-on-one match with Jade on Monday Night Raw. So Nick tells her, you know, we're going to try to find something for you guys tonight. And their tag team opponents are Jade Cargill and Bianca, obviously. You know, during the match, Piper tags in and she actually calls out Jade. Like, she's about to walk up to Bianca, who was the legal, you know, partner in for the other team, and she says, no, I want Jade. She kind of waves Jade on. Jade doesn't come in, so she doesn't get her wish. But, you know, it just kind of leads you to, you know, kind of put Piper over in a sense. Like, for me anyways, I was like, damn, like, she wants a piece of Jade. Like, okay, you know, you like seeing that from Piper, the fact that she's not scared of anybody. And you can tell why Chelsea is just latched onto her, because it just seems like, you know, who wouldn't want to? You know, it's pretty much like having a bodyguard right there. But as far as this match goes, the team that was supposed to win wins. Jade pins Chelsea relatively easily, actually extremely easily, just like one little choke slam, then does her finishing move. Pins her, does that 1-2-3 thing where she licks her finger, whatever. But during this match, there was like a flicker on the TV, and it, you know, if you pause the screen long enough, you could tell that it said the words, "You forgot about us." And this just, I mean, it had Bray Wyatt type of, you know, theme written all over it, just whenever you look at what his promos used to be like. And if you watch the documentary Bray Wyatt Becoming Immortal, then you would almost get the impression that Bo Dallas is going to come back soon. It just seems like he isn't finished at all. He made it seem like this almost relit his fire to want to really pursue this pro wrestling world and make the most of it for his brother. So if Bo Dallas was to come back and bring back this Uncle Howdy gimmick and do something, who knows what he's actually going to do, but if it is Bo, then you have to assume that a lot of eyeballs are going to be on him. And, you know, this, especially if he's doing the type of stuff that Bray used to do with this like riddle type of vignettes before he makes his return. I don't know who else this could be, but the fact that it's "You Forgot About Us," meaning plural, that almost makes me feel like it could be someone, you know, I mean, you don't think maybe Alexa Bliss, right? Like, I mean, she's connected. Eric Rowan, another person. So there's possibilities. But I do feel like it's got to be centered around Bo Dallas, and that's just my early anticipation on this whole thing. Continuing on here in the show, we get a backstage interview with Kevin Owens, and he pretty much just takes the microphone from Byron Saxton, takes the camera with him. He references those cool camera angles where the camera's just been coming in from backstage, going into the crowd. So he picks up a Detroit Tigers championship belt and knocks over a stack of CM Punk shirts, and then he makes his way out to the ring. He talks about how him and Rey Mysterio both have sons that are way taller than them, and, you know, talks about AJ Styles as well, but he says he's going to kick both of their asses tonight, in order to advance to that number one contenders match next week. But before that, he has to win this triple threat, and that's the main event. Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles versus Rey Mysterio. And for a triple threat match, relatively quick. AJ Styles wins it. It was good. I mean, just like I said, it was kind of quick for a triple threat match. But after it's over, LA Knight comes out, and then we get a face-off, a little bit of words exchange between the two guys that are going to be in that number one contenders match next week. LA Knight versus AJ Styles. The winner goes to Backlash to take on Cody Rhodes. And my early prediction is that it's got to be AJ Styles. He's the one that has less time left. You know, he's kind of a little bit closer to, you know, kind of walking into the sunset himself. It would be babyface versus babyface if it was LA Knight. So I think AJ Styles is the one. I mean, Cody Rhodes kind of referenced the history of the NWA and WWE Championship. The fact that Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles are only two of four men that have done it. Seems like we could get a pretty good rivalry, a pretty good promo between these two guys if AJ Styles were to win. But, you know, I wouldn't sell LA Knight short by any means. I think he could absolutely deliver one of the best programs that we've seen this year so far, too, if it were him versus Cody Rhodes, just given that both those guys are red hot, kind of both got hot around the same time. So their trajectories have almost been parallel, if you think of it like that. But that is how the show goes off the air, was those two face-to-face. And, you know, I'm really expecting a pretty good match between those two. The part two, LA Knight got the first win on WrestleMania. So who knows? I'm telling you, I think AJ Styles is going to get it done next week. But we will talk about that whenever we get there. Thank you guys so much for tuning into the SmackDown Review. I definitely appreciate you guys coming back. If you are a new listener who just came on, you know, from WrestleMania weekend, thank you. Welcome. Hopefully you will continue to come back. And hopefully you will go over to the Football Function Podcast, which is my football podcast. Covers all things college football, NFL. Right now we're in the NFL draft coverage, getting prepared for the draft coming up here in just a couple of weeks. Another thing that is very much so on my radar, and that's really whenever things kind of rev up. But unlike the NFL, there's no offseason in WWE, so things are just now kind of starting to get juicy, and I'm really looking forward to the coming weeks. So thank you guys so much. Have a damn good rest of your weekend. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.